Okay, so this quality of compassion, so many, many different ways to touch into it. But it can be a challenge for us because it involves direct contact with suffering. That's what compassion does. And when we're in contact with suffering, there are a lot of ways that we can be a little bit misaligned with that, or we can get a little bit off kilter with that. So that means that there's a need for wisdom along with compassion. I actually think wisdom and compassion are quite related. So one challenge that we have is that we might not really want to connect with the suffering of another. We don't like to be with our own suffering that much, and much less take on the suffering of another. From the poet Jane Hirschfield, blinded by light or black cloth, so many ways not to see others suffer. It's a very concise poem. Blinded by light or black cloth, so many ways not to see others suffer. So we might be kind of invested in things being nice and pleasant and happy, neat, blinded by light in a sense. We're looking for the bliss in the world, and we choose maybe not to see the suffering that's also there. Or we might be weighed down by our own difficulties, like a mask, like our head is covered with a black cloth, and what we see is dark, and what we see is only what's very close to us. And it's about we're caught up in our own suffering, and it's hard to see the suffering of others. And if we do see it, it can't possibly be as bad as our suffering. So there are ways in which we don't quite sometimes connect with other suffering. But even if we do, there are ways in which we can connect with it that are not quite on target. For example, we can separate ourselves still in some way through pity, for example, is said to be the near enemy of compassion, something that looks like compassion but isn't quite. And pity is a sense of you're suffering over there and I'm okay over here. There's a little bit of distance there. That's why this image of the person who's ill on the road, halfway between two towns that are far apart, and you meet them going the other direction, is so powerful because, as I noted in the meditation, it could have been you who got sick in the middle of the road. It's very hard then to say, that can't happen to me, which is what we try to do often. I've noticed, for example, that in this COVID era, when we find out that somebody we know, or maybe a friend of a friend, has COVID, has gotten it, we start asking questions about how they were living, and we check whether or not we're doing that. Oh, well, didn't they used to go to that meeting, that book club meeting? And even though they were outside with masks, I bet that was it. And you're thinking inside, I don't go to any book club meetings, so it's probably okay for me, right? So there's, it's like we're acknowledging the suffering, but we're trying very hard to make sure that it's not going to happen. We're sort of, keeping in our mind, okay, that's probably not going to happen to me. So there's that. Or we can be a little bit afraid, for sure, being in contact with someone whose suffering is going to bring up our fear of that very thing. This is why sometimes it's hard for people to visit loved ones in the hospital, especially if they're dying. It reminds us uncomfortably that we're going to die too. You can't really escape that knowledge, even though you can try to avoid it. So there's a lot of ways that it's hard to really connect in with other suffering and really develop sort of well-aligned compassion, shall we say. So we can recall that the citta involves both our mental capacities and our emotional capacities, if you will, both our mind and our heart, if you will. And this is helpful maybe in, if we know that, to consider how we can strengthen compassion. So on the one side, we can use the mental side to kind of understand what's going on. And we also have to have clarity from the more mental side to really see what's true, really see what's happening. We need that clarity. And then we need the heart side to feel it and not separate ourselves from it. We have to actually open to the suffering that we are seeing and aware of and acknowledging. So this is from Catherine McGee, who's a teacher at Gaia House in the UK. She says, "I see the middle way as the marriage of objectivity and sensitivity, clear seeing together with what is sensitive, intimate, and tangible." So that sounds pretty much like both sides of the citta. She goes on to say, "I've done environmental work, and even with the wholesome idea of care for the environment, we can still conceive of ourselves as separate. This is dukkha. In fact, thinking about caring for the environment is too big, too much to handle. If we really take it in, we feel helpless, or we get pushed into trying to save the world, and both are misery. The climate crisis can lead us to awakening simply because I can't do it." We're going to have to get out of ourselves, in a sense, to handle these really big sufferings. It's part of the reason to make the mind very big when then contemplating, you know, large issues like aging, illness, and death. So then she goes on, "The path of awakening isn't separate from turning toward the climate issue. It requires this marriage of objectivity and sensitivity. We need a middle way attitude expressed as, this is completely beyond me, but I'm still here. It may not be me and mine, but it's not other than me and mine either. This is the art of compassion, is that we have to understand that it is me and mine. We could have that same issue, but it's not, it's not other than me. It could be me and mine, and we're able to see it clearly. So we have the clear seeing and the sensitivity to it. So especially with things like aging, illness, and death, those are definitely me and mine. And it's good to be able to acknowledge that and open to that feeling. So Christina Feldman nicely ties wisdom and compassion together. She says there are two ways to view compassion: as a heart quality to be developed, or as the expression of wisdom. It is the natural expression of wisdom, because wisdom means understanding the Four Noble Truths, in particular, the first truth, that suffering pervades normal human existence. And as one becomes more selfless, that is, more wise, there is less or no differentiation between their suffering and my suffering. So again, we have this kind of breakdown of the barrier and the willingness to touch suffering here and out there. It's not easy, actually. This is quite a demanding Brahma-vihara, but also one that's very natural. We have almost built in, I think, a tendency to want to be free from suffering. That's what motivates us to walk the spiritual path. Many people come to the path through suffering of some kind. And so we know from that our heart wants to be free. It wants to be free from suffering. That is compassion. And it motivates us to find any way that we can to do that. And the way that the Buddha offers is through wisdom, through seeing, really understanding suffering is what frees us from it. So wisdom and compassion, two sides of the same coin. In fact, sometimes they're colorfully called the two wings to awakening, if you will. We're gonna need both of them. So I think a lot of people run into, at some point in their practice, this question of inner cultivation versus outer service in the world. And, you know, sitting on the cushion or compassionate action of some kind. And sometimes the way that's framed, we see those as somehow opposing, or one is subordinate to the other. You know, there's the whichever one you've chosen, you have to think the other one is maybe not the real thing. And I don't think this is so necessary. I think it's, we could see it the way Catherine McGee and Christina Feldman were trying to express. It's not easy to express that, but a sense that we could do both, you know, by simply acknowledging that they're two sides of the same coin. It's very hard to do one without also doing the other. But in terms of, you know, practicality, what does that mean? One is that you can engage in one while being aware of the other. So you can engage in compassionate action in the world from a wisdom perspective, you know, from a perspective where you don't get caught up in the anger and the fear and the judgment, but you instead keep that objectivity side, the equanimity, the awareness of what you're doing. That's one way. Or you can sit on the cushion and radiate compassion. So you're sitting on the cushion, but you're doing a meditative practice that strengthens the heart of care. So those are kind of different ways to manifest both sides at once. Another way that I think is just as valid is to kind of iterate between them. And so you can go out in the world and do what needs to be done and really engage with that for a period of time to strengthen the heart or to challenge the heart, if you will. And then you can go on a three-month retreat and just do Anapanasati practice the whole time. Never think about cultivating compassion during that time. You will be anyway, because they're two sides of the same coin. But I think this iterative way can help mitigate against feeling driven to do certain things. Like, for example, when there are big crises going on in the world, and 2020 gave us plenty of them, there was sometimes a sense of, especially in spiritual communities, a sense of get off the cushion and get out in the street. You know, come on, this is the only possible response to something like this. But on the other hand, I know people who said, pandemic, I'm going on a three-month retreat. You know, I'm going to go rent a cabin somewhere. That's also actually, I think, just as powerful of a response. So we can eliminate that extra worry about whether we're doing one or doing the other. Are we doing it right? You know, what if I've been practicing for 20 years and I never wanted to do any social action? Fine. Maybe this whole lifetime for you is about not doing that, or your whole lifetime is about doing that. So I'm in favor of eliminating this worry about them, because wisdom and compassion always go together, and they have so many different faces, each one. Whenever you're strengthening one, you are strengthening the other. But it helps to have, you know, multiple different ways of doing that. So I encourage, if you liked the meditation that we did, continuing to practice with the compassion radiation practice. It's, I think, quite a powerful one. And so I'll stop there and open it up then for questions about this or about anything else that's come up related to your practice or the retreat so far. We do have two screens, so I'll try to see who's raising their hand. You can also use the Zoom hand. Anne is using the, see that blue hand.
Kim, can you talk a little bit about empathy and its relationship to compassion? Because I thought I heard from what you were saying that you kind of need empathy to get to compassion. Well, Biko and Alio seems to very strictly divide them, and that just doesn't be honest, that doesn't quite feel natural to me. I kind of need to have some empathy for somebody or something, and then I develop compassion. So to me, they're interrelated, but
okay,
I'm kind of interested in.
The very way you've talked about it indicates that you know that they're different. They're not, yeah, which is important. Maybe I'll just talk a little bit about that first, which is that empathy is usually understood to be like feeling for another, like feeling another's difficulty. And, you know, we have mirror neurons, as we're told about now, that, you know, if somebody's feeling sad, it would be natural for us to also have some sadness come up in relation to that. And so that's the sense of empathy, whereas compassion is more, as I've described, like seeing another's suffering, but being able to, you know, just be with that wisely. And I think compassion is the one that is sustainable of those two. Empathy is not sustainable in the long run, in that it will wear us out. That's what leads to what's called compassion fatigue, although it's really empathy fatigue in a sense, because we've allowed ourselves to feel into, take on, in a sense, take on the suffering of others. So what we're looking for is the compassion where there's the wisdom included in it. So then your question, though, is an interesting one, is do we need empathy in order to get to compassion, or could we go straight to compassion? And I don't know that I have a general answer to that. It may be that many of us experience feeling for another as part of the path to realizing the ability to be in contact with suffering, but not suffer ourselves, which is really, in the end, what compassion is about. We have the sensitivity, we feel it, we're touched by it, and we don't suffer for it. Our level of attention and awareness and wisdom is strong enough that we're not being drained by that feeling. And that the process to getting compassion is therefore, I think, a somewhat mature and sophisticated emotion and sense and being in the world that we may not get to immediately. And there may be a significant time where we are taking on the suffering of others by coming in contact with it. And then we have to learn how to be wise with that. We maybe learn techniques for being able to let go, drain ourselves of things that we've picked up. And people who don't do that, they get it stuck in them, right? And so then maybe as we gain that wisdom, we are developing compassion so that we can take in the energy of others and immediately disperse it. And so then our sense of that would be, oh, I have empathy, but the wisdom is so quick, it doesn't let me hold on to it. And so it is actually compassion. Whereas another person may approach in some different way and somehow get to the compassion without that intermediate step of taking on others' pain. So I sense, that's just my intuition, is that it might be somewhat different for different people, but probably the important thing is to know that they're different and that the compassion is a beautiful heart quality where we're in contact with suffering and not suffering ourselves. That's very helpful, actually more helpful to the other person than if we're just drawing in their suffering to ourselves. So it is maybe different than the way, okay, I see that helped, than the way some teachers will teach it. Certainly the later traditions have practices where you're taking in other suffering and sending out your happiness and other kinds of things. But that's what I have for now on that. It's a little different in Buddhism. Okay, Preeti, your hand is up.
Yeah, hi. So just one observation, something that came up during the compassion radiation practices, that it almost seemed to spotlight some of the pains. Some health-related pains. And it seemed like as I was doing the practice, those really seemed to almost come into spotlight, or it felt like they were being intensified. Mm. I kind of felt like I hit a snag in terms of just kind of radiating, more to the, outside. So I'm just kind of curious, do you have any suggestions on how do I work with that in this context? Would I just work? Yeah.
So when this these internal pains intensified, did you find that the level of pain was manageable? Your attention was stronger than that? You were able to just be with it?
Sometimes yes, although sometimes it felt like, you know, it actually seemed to kind of like, you know, it seemed to intensify to the point where, like, you know, I just, like, I had to kind of bring things back to, like, the heart again. I had to kind of bring, you know, like, you know, I had to bring it back to the, you know, recollecting the suffering in the heart. And because then my mind was also wandering, you know, like, I mean, so there was a tendency to really kind of distract away from the practice when things became too much. So
yeah, and that's skillful then. If at any time touching into pain, whether our own or others, starts to feel like it's too much, it is skillful to pull back from that, and to, you can redirect the mind to something that's neutral, some part of the body that doesn't hurt, or to something neutral like the breath or something else, and that's fine. It's normal that we aren't able to instantaneously open to all suffering. It's also kind of a iterative process. And this idea of taking in a little bit of it, like touching it just enough to say, ooh, that's a lot, and then pulling back. Actually, it feels like, oh, it didn't work, I had to pull back. But actually, each time we touch it, there's a little strengthening of the heart. It's called titration. We can kind of touch it and then pull back and then a little bit more. And, you know, you can't exactly measure the progress each day, because it can be really okay one day and then the next day it again feels overwhelming. But in the long run, it is helping to do that. We're kind of conditioning the mind to be able to be with that suffering. Mm-hmm. So that actually sounds okay to me. And it also sounds skillful that you naturally pulled back when it seemed like it was getting intense. Cynthia. Oh, you're muted.
Sorry. Could you please give one more quick recap on Christine Feldman, what she said, Christina Feldman? I love her, and I would really like to write it down, or the gist of it.
Okay. She says, there are two ways to view compassion: as a heart quality to be developed, or as the expression of wisdom. This is a fairly common idea, is that there.
Yeah.
Compassion is the expression of wisdom. It is the natural expression of wisdom, because wisdom means understanding the Four Noble Truths. In particular, the first truth, that suffering pervades normal human experience, or we might say, you know, sort of everyday common human experience. And as one becomes more selfless, more wise, there is less or no differentiation between their suffering and my suffering.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Linda.
Yes. I read in the newspaper that a woman was driving and someone threw a rock off an overpass and it broke her windshield and she got all this facial damage. And this is just one example of all the things we read in the newspaper. And I just feel sick when I read about these things. Can you just comment on that?
Yeah. It's moving. The fragility of human existence, isn't it? You know, the fact that we don't know when pain or illness or death could come upon us. And it can be a lot to open to that. Your heart is sensitive to that. Even just reading about maybe a stranger having something like that happen can touch the heart. And it's actually, you may not feel like it at this moment, but it's a very beautiful quality that we can have that kind of care. And it can, in a sense, awaken us to the human condition. But as with the case of Preeti, if it starts to feel overwhelming to imagine all these things that might just randomly come upon us, then it would be skillful not to let the mind get overwhelmed by those possibilities. Is this beginning to touch into? Yeah.
I think not only do I care about the person, but I think there's a little selfishness in that it's my own desire to feel safe, you know.
Yes. Touches right into that vulnerability, that fragility. It is very vulnerable to have a human body, and we're so unprotected in many ways. And there are a number of approaches to this. One is to take a wisdom approach and say, you know, what can actually help to mitigate that sense of vulnerability, fragility? I mean, you've clearly got that part. You don't need to be sensitized. And there are people who go through the world imagining themselves to be invulnerable. And this is, of course, a delusion. But given that we are vulnerable to pain, to illness, to random things coming in the window, what would really help? I'm actually asking, do you have a sense of any way to mitigate that? What do you know that might help?
The only thing I can think of is the preciousness of every minute.
Okay, so yeah, so responding with a sense of care for, and realizing that, yes, moments that are not moments of suffering can sustain us in a certain way. But let's consider on a smaller scale. So instead of, you know, a rock coming through the window and causing serious physical damage, something simpler like, you know, a headache, or, you know, the issues that we might have in a given day. Are there ways that your practice supports those kinds of everyday suffering?
I'm so new, you'd have to ask somebody else.
Okay, yeah. So taking it to probably just in the time you've been sitting, you've noticed that sometimes the back hurts or the knees hurt or something while you're sitting. And one of the things that we learn through mindfulness meditation is that by being aware of something that is difficult, there's a way in which we can be with it, even if it doesn't change. Maybe we eventually get frustrated enough that we move our leg or shift our position, and that's fine also. But at least at the beginning, those first, we maybe when we first feel a pain, we say, oh, wait a minute, I'm going to try mindfulness with this and just see if we can open to that sensation, feel it as not just pain, but as, oh, actually, it's, you know, a little shifting this way, that way, it's some tightness, some heat, and it changes, and it goes away for a moment, then it comes back, there's pressure. So kind of seeing that it's multiple different sensations. In this way, we can, and then we realize after 5 minutes of that it doesn't bother us anymore, you know, whereas if we hadn't done any of that investigation or that mindfulness, we might have just felt it worse and worse and had to change position and started having fantasies about needing back surgery if we sat any longer, all these things. And so there's a way in which we see that the mind is adding on to a physical sensation. And so we start to gain a sense that what we're learning in meditation is ways in which we can be with suffering or be with difficulty in ways that allow us not to make it worse, not to suffer as much with it. And although it seems like a stretch at this moment, perhaps, this is the solution for these bigger sufferings also. In the long run, it's the mind that will help us. Now, in a given moment when something large happens, if I fall and break my leg, you know, ouch, that's really going to hurt. But you can bet my mindfulness will be right there. I will have some clarity about how to deal with that. The next thing that needs to be done, I'll try to apply wisdom of, you know, this is going to be a few months now, being with it, finding the resources needed. It's always the way the mind meets experience that determines whether we suffer or we have some freedom. And so small, medium, large, it's always the same solution, but it starts to look different as we keep practicing. But it's also kind of nice in that we can practice with the little pains in meditation and the little inconveniences of the stores out of my favorite kind of cheese and these kinds of things that are not major upsets in our life. It's like lifting little weights and we get a little stronger, and that helps us lift the bigger weights. And so we never need to diminish the importance of just being mindful of the little things. And then before we know it, we're going to be quite strong inside, just like building up those weights. But does that begin to provide like almost a little sort of a steps that might be taken toward this?
Thank you.
Larger issue.
Well, yeah. Actually, I almost died 25 years ago, and I have recovered to have great joy. So,
there you go. That is something that you know that from your own experience, yeah, that would help maybe in a situation like this. So we have a lot of wisdom, all of us, but we may not have put it together or brought it to the fore. And we can keep practicing with these practices that gradually bring the heart and the mind and the body together. I think that's a great note for ending on tonight. I wish you well in the ongoing ups and downs of life. And some of you have practice discussion tomorrow, so please check your time again and make sure you use the practice discussion link, not this exact link. And I will see you here again tomorrow at 7. Be well.
Thank you.